Attention. Attention. Flint has escaped. Find him. Find him.
Fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve. Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 727, May 18th. 2017. Nasser?
Gracias, senor. I say hola, Nando, and gazpacho regards from Viva España to everybody.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, this was Ferrari's race to win. Fernando loves Indy dogs. And what's up with Kimi and the love? Of course, we've got an interview with the man himself, Christopher DeHardy, the original F1 Weekly listener. We've got another episode of Tech Talk with Tim. And don't forget, F1 Weekly now available on WROCK Radio streaming on WLOR.net, Wednesdays at 11 p.m., Saturdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good. I would like to get a bite of one of those indie dogs. That's a new one.
It's a good one.
Absolutely.
And now they have a Fernando dog.
That's very good.
Mm.
And when he reports to a higher authority, we're talking Briatore.
We are talking Flavio. Bravo, bravo, bravo. Fisico. So I don't know what happened, but Ferrari should have won this race. Am I wrong?
No, they should have, but it was what a fantastic race it was. And that wonderful scene of the kid crying and then later having a big smile with Kimi, that was beautiful.
Was it beautiful?
For me, it was, and I think it's also loved by a lot of people.
But I think, actually, the kid was confused. He was actually crying because Fernando was in a Honda-powered McLaren.
Yes, that saga continues. But, you know, I'll tell you, let's talk a little bit about Colli, LCH on pole, and what a season he's having. He is now one shy of Senna's number of pole position and post shy of equaling the all-time record, 68, held by Michael Schumacher. And his pole was pole number 250 for a British driver. So this kid is going to have a tremendous season this year, one way or the other.
Absolutely. I agree with you. But, it was a good race. I wouldn't call it exciting, but I'm really caught up with Fernando and Indianapolis right now.
Well, what do you think about Nando going Nadal in P1?
Pretty good.
Yeah, he's gone from beach chair to cameraman to now playing tennis, and I think it will be good for him to race at Indy.
I think it is. He's a racer. He needs to go fast. And he was in the top six this morning, so keep up the good work. Juan Pablo was like 10th.
Yeah, these two guys will make a big name in this race, that's for sure. The Spanish Grand Prix, man, what a freaking exciting race it was. And especially, you know, last few years we've been used to knowing the result before the race starts. But this was incredible.
That's very, very true. and the hit on Kimi was a big bummer. I thought that, I don't know, you know, I thought it was a great race, but not super exciting, but there was some touching that was not necessary.
Yeah, you know, it was sad to see Max Verstappen, a hero from last year, to go out on the at the first corner. That was not too cool. But these things happen, as they say.
Well, not only that, but Max Verstappen is just not in the conversation very much anymore.
No, he will be. And the thing is, you know, what I'm really enjoying, you know, as we have seen, the F1 paddock is being more open, more friendly. And I'm also enjoying very much the lack of stupid penalties they used to throw out all the time.
That's true. I have to admit that the FIA and the Scooby-Doo guys have done a marvelous job because of all the complaining we did last year. And it worked. I mean, we are not getting the penalties that we used to get.
Yeah, and thanks to Ross Brawn, I think within a year or two, we're going to see some loud racing sound, which I really miss very much.
Yeah, Ross Brawn's going to kick some ass. I think Liberty is opening it up. And, of course, they started in Barcelona with a lot more activities for the fans. They're making it more friendly, more approachable. And pretty soon, it's going to be just like walking up to Greg Biffle.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like I said, you know, when I was at Brands Hatch in 1982, Niki Lauda and Keke Rosberg are testing, and I'm in the pit talking to team members, and I was talking to Niki Lauda, I would say like 10 minutes after he got out of the car. And it's, you know, I don't expect that kind of closeness these days, but, you know, Formula One should be more open to fans every day. You know, I'll give you an example how things were in Bernie's days. And, of course, he did a tremendous job. Some years ago, a book was published with his blessing about, it was like a coffee table book. I don't remember the name, but the price was like $5,000. Now, you tell me how many fans of motor racing that go to a Formula One race, or any race for that matter, can afford a $5,000 coffee table racing book.
I know. There's the elitist side of Formula One for sure, but people don't, they just forget that it's six-pack Joe that foots the bill.
Absolutely, and it's a six-pack Joe or a 12-pack, you know, hobo that has made Formula One so famous all over the world.
Absolutely.
But there was some real great, exciting action. I mean, the Sebastian Vettel versus Valtteri Bottas, wow, I loved it.
Yeah, that was exciting, I have to agree. And the kablamo of the Mercedes engine was exciting for me.
Yeah, it was the first one since Malaysia last year, when basically that was the race Nico Rosberg won, got his first championship.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, it is. And there was beautiful driving between Carlos Sainz Jr. and Pascal Wehrlein. I think Pascal is doing a very good job, and a lot of people had given up hope on him.
Yeah, very true. I know.
What else did you enjoy during the race, sir?
Well, you know, I like Barcelona. It's a great track. I know the winds can be annoying, but and it's, you know, it's Fernando's track, so I always like a race in Barcelona. It used to be for me much more exciting in 06 and 05, but I still love it. I mean, this race was good. And I just can't believe Sebastian Vettel didn't win. I mean, I thought Mercedes really outfoxed the Fox.
Yeah, I was also very surprised, because the way it was going for Sebastian, I thought he's gone. And he looked very racy after the start of the race. And I think race could have been, this is just my opinion, I think the race could have been more intensive. Both of them, Seb and LCH, were on the same tire strategy.
That's very true. A lot of tire decisions. And unfortunately, once again, tires are responsible for some of the results.
Yeah, but then, you know, everybody has the same tire. It's not like one guy is running on Bridgestone and the other on the expanding Michelin. You know what I'm
saying? I know what you're talking about.
And I'll say this, you know, I really caught Sebastian Vettel, and LCH, with all his racing talent and amazing achievements, he is not known as a thinking man driver in the sense of a Lauda or a Prost. When Lewis is on, he is on and gone. And as we saw in the final races of last season, I mean, he can be very untouchable. And the team telling him there will be opportunities towards the end, was very, very intriguing because I thought that, you know, once again, Ferrari and Seb would be enjoying their victory.
I concur. I agree with you. I was stunned, but in the end, LCH is beginning to mature.
Yeah, he's becoming a machismo man. And even he said after the interview when he was being interviewed by Pedro de la Rosa that how things were tough for him when he came to Spain initially, and now he has great love for the country and the people. And so it's all lovey-dovey now.
Yeah, everybody loves me.
Yeah, and Daniel Ricciardo, Spain was his first podium since Mexico last year. And I don't think we're going to see a triple play for the championship this year, as many were hoping and expecting. I think it's going to be the two alpha males, one from Ferrari, one from Mercedes.
No doubt. I'm sort of bummed out about the whole thing. At least Force India is looking strong.
Yeah, I mean, very impressive. And they took advantage of two top-line drivers dropping out on the opening lap. Sergio Perez and Esteban Ocon, talking of Force India, were fourth and fifth, respectively. And as you can see, Clark, Esteban Ocon does not have as much experience as Sergio, but ever so slowly he is catching up to him, and he's almost there, you know.
Right. Very, very true. I was really impressed with my fellow Français.
Yes, and this kid is going to be world champion someday, just like the kid he beat in European F3, and who now drives for Red Bull and won the Spanish Grand Prix last year. Yeah, and Perez, you know, this kid, I have to say, man, I mean, if anybody who watched him in GP2 and Formula BMW would have said, you know, this is not Formula One material. Sure, he has some good backing from Telmex, but he has really made the most of opportunities that were given to him, and he now has the best point scoring streak of active drivers. He has gone 15 races and have scored a point in each of them, which, you know, translates into a lot of money. And there are rumors floating around F1 paddock that he may replace Kimi at Ferrari. And if you recall, Sergio Perez, I don't know if he's still in the Ferrari program, but some years ago he was in the Ferrari development program when he was at Sauber. And he also brings a whole enchilada of Carlos Slim's Telmex sponsorship, which will help.
That's very true. He would be good at Ferrari, but then there's a whole, you know, Romain Grosjean would be great at Ferrari, Hülkenberg would be great at Ferrari, Ricciardo would be great at Ferrari, and there's even talk of Fernando going back to Ferrari.
Yeah, it would be nice to see somebody who can rattle. There are not many people who can rattle Sebastian Vettel's cage, but Daniel Ricciardo. But, you know, in the team principals conference before the race, they asked Christian Horner about their drivers. And he said both of them have signed for 2018. So I think they will stay there, and let's see what happens, who goes through. I will be surprised if they keep Kimi Raikkonen again.
You know what? I won't be surprised. I'm done with being surprised. Kimi Raikkonen is going to be there for another 10 years.
But I'll tell you, this kid, they will talk about him in Mondial. What's his name? Charles Leclerc. Man, what a talent he is. He is a rookie in the GP2 championship, and there's a good possibility he might win the championship in his first year, like Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton. And he is part of the Ferrari Junior Academy. He will be a good driver. Yeah. And both Toro Rosso in the points, Carlos Sainz Jr. 7th and Daniel Kvyat 9th. And in between was Pascal Wehrlein in 8th. And he has been doing a very good... I'm really impressed by him since his returning to action after missing... I think he missed 2 races, right?
Right.
And Mr. Romain, talking of Romain Grosjean, he took the final point for the American Haas team. And I don't think we're going to see Romain Grosjean at Ferrari, to be honest with you.
I agree. I think his born-on date is passed.
Yeah, or sell-by date to Ferrari has expired. And, you know, driver on slippery slope, I think Lance Stroll, for Lance, despite Daddy's billions, F1 has not been a stroll in the park. As we have seen before, he takes his time to get going, but once he gets going, he's very quick. And I think he may struggle more, but I'm hopeful he will see a much more mature driver in him by next season. And, of course, his Pepito has the money to keep him in Formula One, you know, for the next 10 years, even if he's not winning. But I think he'll turn around. He is a very quick driver, and I'm hopeful and expecting him to do very good. What's your take on Lance Stroll, Senor?
I'm not impressed. As simple as that. Felipe Massa, old man of the sea, is whooping ass.
Yeah, but Felipe has a lot of experience that makes quite a bit of difference.
Yeah, but you know what? People with very little experience come out and impress, like Fernando's, like Kimi Raikkonen's, like Lewis Hamilton's. That's what you have to do when you're given an opportunity. You need to run with the opportunity, or you will be left behind.
That is very true. That is very true. And I'm kind of surprised that you mentioned Lewis Hamilton. Refresh my memory. How did he do in his first year, and who was he up against?
I can't remember that year. I just don't recall.
Well, Ronnie, I don't blame you. Okay, sir, what else? Shall we talk a little bit about the historia of what has happened in Spain?
Yes, that's a good idea because, you know, as you know, we're always up against the clock and we have a great interview and Tech Talk with Tim, which is always outstanding. And this time, it's about transmissions.
Oh, very good. Yeah, you know, the 2017 Spanish Grand Prix was race number 961 in the glorious history of Formula One. And now 27 races have been won by Paul Mann of Barcelona. And victory was number 50. You know, he can go 55. It was win number 55 for Lewis Hamilton. Very, very impressive, you know. It's fantastic, the talents we have seen in our lifetime. I'll tell you that, Clark.
Yeah.
And, you know, we haven't done a goodie bag, so let's do a little goodie bag of the Spanish Grand Prix. You know, not just at Barcelona. Famous wins in Spanish Grand Prix. Niki Lauda, 1974. First victory for Schumacher as a Ferrari driver came in Barcelona in 1996. Epic performance in the rain. Surprise, surprise. Days of days for Pastor Maldonado in 2012, becoming the only driver from Venezuela to ever win a Formula One race. And, of course, Max Verstappen last year became the first sports teenage Grand Prix winner. And what was really surprised, it was his first race with the mothership Red Bull. And I do want to mention George Former, famous for his UOP Can-Am days. He was in the top five in, I think, 1973 when he was with UOP Shadow. So I remember when he finished there, it was quite a surprise because at that time he was not a well-known name in Formula One. And, of course, we had a big drama in the 1976 Spanish Grand Prix when Hunt was disqualified from his victory because the car had the same width as met the requirement, but there was a little bit extra bulge on the Goodyear tires. And when they measured the car with the width of the tire and all that, it was a little bit more than the regulation allowed. So he was disqualified. And had that stood, Niki Lauda would have won the championship, but then he was the one reinstated as the winner. And, of course, my favorite Spanish Grand Prix, 1986, Tio Pepe at Jerez, one of the closest ever Grand Prix finishes in Formula One history. And this was between Senna and Mansell, and another surprise. This was fantastic, man. The last six laps, Mansell closed second a lap. He had no problem passing Alain Prost, but when he came up to Ayrton Senna, it became a junkyard dog battle. Fantastic.
Superb.
Yes, sir. Shall we talk a little bit, since we are against the clock, about some other races there?
Sure.
Okay, Formula 2. Previously known as GP2, Charles Leclerc, as we mentioned, of Monaco, was the winner of the feature race on Saturday, his second win of the season. Leclerc is managed by Nicolas Todd and his company called All Road Management, and as we mentioned just now, already part of Ferrari stable. Sunday's sprint race was won by Honda-backed Japanese driver Nobuharu Matsushita. Leclerc leads with 73 points over English driver Oliver Rowland on 47. And then what we have, the GP3, their season started in Barcelona with race one on Saturday. Winner was Nirei Fukuzumi of Japan, and he's also backed by Honda. I am trying to confirm if he yelled on the radio after winning the race, GP3 engine, GP3,
Keep up the good work, Nas.
Yes, sir. And, it's, my homie from the other side of the border, but still a homie. Second race was won by Indian driver Arjun Maini, so I'm very happy for him, who led from start to finish. and second was your homeboy, French driver, Turian Bokolacci. And talking of this Indian kid, Arjun Maini, they mentioned this on the F1 broadcast on NBC Sports. He has been announced as a Haas development driver. An American driver, Santino Ferrucci, who is already under the Haas wings, was eighth in the race, GP3. And one driver who needs a lot of new motivation is Giuliano Alesi. He was 11th, and amazingly, he is in the Ferrari driver development program. And I don't know which series they will put him in, because he's nowhere near as quick as his Le Papa.
Well, maybe he's texting Leo.
Leo Mansell?
Yeah.
I think he's somewhere on St. Andrew's Golf Course in Scotland.
That's beautiful, man.
Yes, and there was a race in Indy Grand Prix, which is on the road course. Will Power took pole number 250 for Team Penske. In fact, four of the top five qualifiers were Penske driver, with Montoya in fifth, and Power went on to win the race. The Formula E race in Monte Carlo was won by, as usual, Sebastian Buemi over Lucas Di Grassi. And Sebastian Buemi is having a very dominating, or shall I say, electrifying season in Formula E. World Touring Cars, they were in Budapest. Winners were Thiago Monteiro of Portugal, and Mehdi Benani from Morocco was second in the second race. I'm sorry, Mehdi Benani was the winner of the second race of the weekend. And talking of Portugal, maybe you follow this. Congratulations to Dr. Miguel on Portugal winning the Eurovision Song Contest for the first time. So very happy for him.
So exciting. Congratulations, Dr. Miguel. Keep up the good work. Wow. And that was the Motorsports Mondial. We just didn't have time to spin the globe.
Yes, sir. And talking of spinning, we will be spinning out to go to our respective jobs now. And I would like to thank Chris DeHardy for his time. And this interview was conducted in St. Petersburg. It's always nice to see him. A lot of enthusiasm for motor racing, and I wish him all the best. And many thanks to Tech Talk Tim for his Tech Talk. And it's always good to hear from him also.
Okay, folks, I'm here in beautiful St. Petersburg with one of the original, most dedicated, loyal listeners of F1 Weekly from beautiful Luling, Louisiana, Chris DeHardy. Chris, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I cannot complain. I'm in St. Petersburg. The weather's beautiful out here. I just wish it were maybe 5 degrees cooler, but if that's my only complaint, I'm fine. Everything's going great. There's no negativity here.
You and your dad have been going to Indy for many, many years. What was the experience like to see an F1 Weekly graduate win the race, the one in his first attempt?
Well, so that whole weekend was really, really interesting. Although I tell you what, here when I first heard of Alexander Rossi, I think it was when y'all covered the Formula BMW World Finals back in 2007, 2008, and I believe you did a couple of interviews with him back then. So it was actually really neat to see someone that F1 Weekly covered way back then win the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500, and what a race to win in his first attempt, mind you, and only his second oval race. A lot of people may not have remembered that because he didn't do any of the IndyCar feeder series over here. Being only his second oval race, I mean, what a race to win.
Yes. Okay, now tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you have graduated, and we won't ask you for your grades unless you want to bring that up. What have you been doing in the world of motor racing?
So my first ever interview with F1 Weekly, it was before I went to LSU. I started out over there in engineering. That didn't necessarily work out, but I did graduate in December of 2012 with mass communications. It was a lot better than engineering. I've been working part-time at a big box retailer in a warehouse, trying to find my way to get to other different races, and I've been writing for different outlets. For a couple of years, I was with one outlet, then I switched to a different outlet for 2016, and then I've been writing for Motorsports Tribune for the last few months, and it's been a fantastic experience. Joey Barnes, the founder and editor-in-chief, is a very, very close friend of mine, and someone I value very much in my time here in motorsports. It's been fantastic.
Okay, well, we allow you to name where you're writing and, you know, who you are reporting to. So if you want to mention some of the stuff where our other fellow List Familia members can go and read your stuff, here is your chance.
Well, Motorsports Tribune, they're who I write for now. They cover F1, NASCAR, IndyCar, the Maserati Indy. But I wouldn't have gotten there if I wouldn't have made the taken the chance of going into my first IndyCar race as a media member at Barber in 2014, and then kept going from there. But of course, one thing that's helped me with following motorsports even more has been listening to F1 Weekly. And my first podcast I actually listened to you guys was actually number 9, way back in late 2005, and it was amazing that, you know, there were so many different podcasts back then. I listened to a couple of them, and then it was interesting that, you know, y'all had updates every week, and that's why they called it F1 Weekly, of course. And at that time, F1 was the biggest thing I was following at that point, because we saw the split going on and things like that. And then as the split ended, I sort of got more involved in IndyCar as well. And it was great. It was also great seeing, you can't see on a podcast, you can only hear on a podcast, but it's great hearing all the different kinds of motorsport that get followed around the world. That's one reason why I love listening to F1 Weekly for so long, is that, you know, whether it's Superbikes or World Rally or V Supercars or, you know, F1 or GP2 or World Series by Renault, there's so many different types of motorsport, and you're hearing all the names of the drivers going up, starting up young, and then as they get to the top, you can remember, oh wait, I remember NASCAR talking about that guy and interviewing that guy. I mean, Jack Hawksworth, same situation. Jack Harvey, same situation. Both of them won an Indy Lights, and Jack Harvey now is trying to get an IndyCar ride, but I remember hearing him first on F1 Weekly.
Yeah. Okay, tell us about this season. The season starting here in St. Petersburg. Obviously, you know, the big players, Penske, Andretti, and Ganassi will be dominating. You know, one thing I've been reading about IndyCar racing lately is the concern that these three teams have like 60% of the drivers. Do you think this is good for the health of the series, or what do you have in mind?
Well, if you look at let's go and tackle the 800-pound gorilla. We look at NASCAR with how many satellite teams everybody has. I mean, Gibbs has a satellite team. You look, I think it's like, what was it, Furniture Row, I think it is. You look at Hendrick, and, you know, they had Stuart Haas for a while, and now Stuart Haas is with Ford. And obviously they made a right decision moving to that direction. Everybody has satellite teams all over the place. So while it isn't in name, they have the same kind of equipment. So it gets to a point where you have to wonder, you know, are these satellite teams really good for the sport in that sense? My position is, if there's more cars on the track, great. I mean, I hate the fact that Schmidt-Peterson isn't in Indy Lights right now, because they were the sixth team. But their cars got bought out and picked up by other teams, so we still have the same amount of cars, but with one less team on the grid. So ideally, would I like to see more team owners in IndyCar? Absolutely. We just had the Yunkos Racing announcement last month that they're going to be in IndyCar for the 500 this year, but they're looking at doing 2018 full-time. Supposedly, Trevor Carlin's looking at 2018 as well, although nothing has been said by them. But if you look at Carlin's trend, they got out of GP2 this year, and they got a fourth Indy Lights car. Could we see them expand their American operations? Absolutely. Will they? Time will tell. But I think that as long as we have talented drivers on the grid, I'm okay if Penske and Ganassi each have four cars. But I want to see guys that deserve the seats get those seats. I mean, if you look at Penske's seats, you have the 2011 Indy Lights champion, you have the 2014 Series champion, you have the 2001, 2002, 2009 Indy 500 winner, and you have the 2016 champion. All four of those drivers deserve the seats. Now, if you look at someone who hasn't had as good of results in one of the top teams there, you start to wonder, well, could that seat go to somebody else? That's where you run into a little bit of an issue, in my opinion.
Okay. Now, talking of young talents coming through the system, who do you see as the real hot American young talent coming into IndyCars in the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, the only thing I would change about that question is maybe 4 or 5, because there is one driver in USF 2000 that I think has it. It's hard to define what it is, like the raw talent, raw speed. But I'm talking about the driver that's driving the number 3 Soul Red Mazda car for K Motorsports, Oliver Askew. So this driver has done 2 race weekends in Formula Masters in China. He did a race weekend for Skip Barber in Road America. Then he wins a shootout, or is one of the 2 drivers selected to represent the U.S. in the Formula Ford Festival in the Walter Hayes Trophy race. He does well there. And then he goes to Mazda Race with Laguna Seca, where he wins a $200,000 scholarship with only 3 weekends in cars before he goes to England. And this weekend is his first weekend in a street circuit, and he's qualified 3rd in one of the races for USF 2000 and 2nd in the other race. The speed's there. He doesn't have enough experience, but at this point, if you have it, with experience, you'll only get better. in my opinion, he is one of the next rising American talents that we will see in IndyCar, hopefully, if he can attract enough sponsorship. Now, if you look at Indy Lights, I'm going to skip Pro Mazda because they have a very limited car count, but if you look at Indy Lights, Aaron Tielis is another example of someone who, in my opinion, is going to be one of the next big stars. He has a great social media following. He has a great presence there. I mean, heck, he knits. I mean, you're looking for someone who has a, you know, odd habits here and there, or odd, you know, pastimes. That's one of the guys as well that I would look at. He won the Pro Mazda title last year, so that's why he's running a Soul Red car for Ballardi Auto Racing. And then you look at other, maybe not necessarily Americans, but, you know, guys close by. In USF 2000, you have Parker Thompson, a Canadian, who actually has been really touch and go about whether he was going to drive this year, driving for Exclusive Autosport in USF 2000. He was the runner-up last year in USF 2000 to Anthony Martin, who, an Australian, is in Pro Mazda this year. So that's who I would look at as your next big American superstars. Now, we went north of the border. Let's go south of the border. In Indy Lights...
Are you going to go underneath the wall or jump over the wall?
What wall? The only wall I see over here is against the, I guess it is in turn one over here. But now, looking at Pato O'Ward, in 2016 for Pro Mazda, he only had funding for the first two race weekends. So with four races, what does he do? He wins three of them and finishes second in the other race. So he actually did the entire season. He was kind of on a race-to-race deal. So this year in 2017, he only is guaranteed this race weekend for Team Pelfrey in Indy Lights. And what happened to Pato? In his first session in the Indy Lights car here in St. Petersburg, he was actually top of the timesheet by less than a tenth of a second. So I notice about Pato is that whenever the pressure is really on and he has to perform, he pulls a rabbit out of the hat. When pressure hits you, you either become a diamond or you fall apart, and he hasn't fallen apart. So if you're looking at someone from above the border and below the border as well, and overall in North America, Pato, Oliver, and Parker are three of the guys that I would look at, as well as Aaron, in my opinion.
Okay. Now, you're New Orleans, NOLA, the racing track there, the Indy cars went there. They're no longer there. What are the major events there, and you were regular there?
So I go there, I wouldn't say as frequently as I'd like to, but funny enough, you mentioned major events. Not on the big track. Well, on the big track, a couple weeks ago, they had the F4 U.S. Championship there doing preseason testing. The week after that was a really interesting event. They had Supercars USA had their Pro Tour Winter Nationals out there. They have the Winter Nationals were down here in New Orleans. They had their Spring Nationals over in Sonoma. And they had the Summer Nationals at Newcastle up in Indiana. But this was my first karting event that I'd ever gone to. And the sheer size of this event just blew my mind. What really set it all in, what really made it official for me was I look at the humongous factory tents for like Burrell Art, which is one of the bigger karting manufacturers. That's the one Montoya's son races for. And then next to them, I saw one trailer with one car with father and son operation. And I realized you could be fast either if you have a big budget or a small budget, but it's all for fun for a lot of people. And I learned a lot about karting, and it was really eye-opening, all the different things that you could do with a go-kart.
Now, Montoya's son, is he sponsored by McDonald's or Burger King?
Subway, actually.
Are you serious?
No. I will say this. Montoya, actually, he looked like he was having a lot of fun. Hey, Rubens Barrichello was also at this event, and both of them looked like they were having a lot of fun. And really, that's what it all boils down to. And I've always believed this, especially in motorsports. If you're not having fun, you shouldn't be doing this. And I never saw Montoya as much at ease as he was in NOLA. Because, well, primarily he wasn't driving, but really it was about his son. It wasn't about him. And he was great to see. I didn't get a chance to talk to him that much. I just, you know, said hi in passing. But it was also great seeing some of the Road to Indy guys there as well working on karts too. I'm not driving, but working on them too, which was great to see. I love seeing a driver getting their hands dirty and, you know, working on their cars. Maybe not working on their karts, but working on, you know, technical components and all. That's great to see.
In Indy cars, I think one of the best drivers is Will Power. Obviously, Montoya does not have a full-time ride. I consider him also one of the best. What's your take on Will Power?
Well, for Power,
and you are on a first-name basis with him, from what I understand.
So he actually signed a crew shirt for me quite a few years ago at the parade, which I wasn't expecting. But so my take on Power, it took him a while to get used to the ovals. But when he got used to the ovals, he's blindingly quick. I mean, he was second at Indy a couple of years ago. He won a 500-mile race at Fontana a couple of years ago. In fact, he actually won the championship at Fontana back in 2014 by his teammate making a mistake. Of course, he also lost the title at Fontana back in 2012. It just took him a little bit longer, I guess, to get used to the ovals as he was on road street courses. But his drive at Milwaukee in 2014, I guess, really cemented his presence on the ovals, where I can do this, I know how to do this now. And I think he's found his feet on the ovals more so this year than a lot of other years.
Yeah, and
now we switch to Formula Uno, which we like very much. What's your take? Let me ask you a question. You probably are following the preseason testing. Looks like Ferrari is quick. Do you think Sebastian Vettel will be on the Dave Brubeck program this season and take five?
I think, frankly, Vettel has had good testing times. The Winter World Championship, as Ron Dennis once called it, it's almost irrelevant in its chance because there's no scrutineering at these tests. To my knowledge, there's nothing official about, you know, there's no official, you know, without the scrutineering there, it's tough to tell, you know, if they're doing this on low fuel runs or what other rabbits the team are pulling out of the hat to get these quick times. Until we get to Albert Park, we won't know 100% of what's, you know, what everyone's hand is. I mean, Mercedes could be sandbagging. Ferrari could be sandbagging. Ferrari could be trying to set the bar high up to get everyone to, you know, put their best foot forward. In my opinion, you shouldn't sandbag because that gives you false data. You should try and push as hard as you can, because if you're not doing it, then you're compromising yourself. Now, one thing I did want to bring up is, what's going on with McLaren? I mean, they've had a lot of issues from a couple of things that I've read, and I'm hoping that they can get everything straightened out for Australia, because it's not looking good for them, you know. But as for Vettel, it's difficult to say at this point. I mean, there's so many different things that they have to work on. We don't know if their 2017 engine is, you know, fully up to par. And with all the different changes that the rules have had for this year, it's difficult to say. Could he do it? Absolutely. He's driving a Ferrari, you know. But then again, McLaren have had the measure of everybody else. But McLaren is also a new driver in Valtteri Bottas. So could he do it? Absolutely. Will he? Time will tell.
Now, talking of Bottas, will he do to Lewis Hamilton what Lewis Hamilton did to Fernando Alonso when they were teammates? That's the big question.
I think for Hamilton, he got rattled last year. But how you respond to that really, really shows how good of a driver you are. I think what happened to Malaysia really got to him. I think what happened to Spain got to him. Can he bounce back? And I think last year he didn't bounce back as well as he could have. But I think that if Bottas gets a couple of race wins early, that might rattle him. But then again, Bottas hasn't had the experience with the team that Lewis has had over the last few years. We have to also remember that Bottas wouldn't have gotten this drive if he didn't have the talent. So cream rises to the top, as you know. But we have to – that might be a better question after Albert Park, because – Bottas done a full race distance? I don't know if he's done a full race distance in anger with the new testing, because I know a lot of testing is just, you know, 5-10 laps and then go back in, 5-10 laps, go back in. After he does a full race distance in anger, you know, in testing, I think that might give us a bit more of a baseline to go by. But I will say this, if Bottas rattles him, you might see a whole different Lewis Hamilton after the first few races of the year.
Okay, it's great to see you here. I want you to finally give a message to members of F1 Weekly, and I'm sure they would love to hear from you.
Well, one thing I've always maintained is that if there's racing going on all over the world, take a look at it. I mean, if it's V8 supercars, if it's 120cc bikes in Malaysia, or if it's Le Mans series, or if it's Formula E, whatever it is, if it's got four wheels and an engine, or motor in Formula E's case, take a look. No matter what, I can't get enough of motorsports, and I would love to watch more if I could. Never stop watching. I mean, look at YouTube, for example. If you miss anything, YouTube has highlights as well. And keep an eye on your guys going through the ladder system, because you never know where they'll get to one day. And I hope everyone is enjoying IndyCar, NASCAR, F1, whatever you enjoy.
Well, you know, to borrow a phrase from our great leader, I see racing not only in your eyes, but in your glasses also. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. It's great to do this. It's fantastic.
Christopher, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
I am Carlos Reutemann. Please listen F1 Weekly.
Hello, techies, and welcome back for another episode with me, Tim. As you know, engines produce lots of things, noise, heat, emissions, but the two we'll discuss today are torque and rotational speed, and both of those get dumped into the transmission. Torque, as you should recall if you've been paying attention, is a twisting force. It's measured in foot-pounds or newton meters, or really any unit of force times any unit of distance. A quarter-pound hamburger patty held at 3 foot arm's length produces 3/4 of a foot-pound of torque. An engine supplying torque to a car's wheels is what pushes the car forward. But an engine doesn't just supply non-moving torque, it supplies torque at speed. Rotational speed can be measured in revolutions per minute, degrees per second, or any unit of angle divided by any unit of time. The Earth's rotational speed around the Sun is 1 revolution per year, for example. Because of their engineering and the laws of physics related to the combustion of fuels, engines have certain speed ranges they like to operate in. Too slow, and the engine will not have enough momentum to get through a cycle, and it will stall. Or too fast, and the heat and momentum of an engine will do some damage. An F1 engine operates between a few thousand RPM and 15,000 RPM. But if you just attach the engine to the wheels, you'd have some problems. For all the noise an F1 engine makes, it would barely be able to make the car move because it wouldn't have enough torque. So that's why gears are needed. A transmission in an F1 car today has 8 forward gears and 1 reverse gear, and each gear has a certain ratio associated with it. Ignoring the gear ratio of the differential for the time being, the ratio of a gear currently engaged by the transmission is both a measure of how much slower the wheels turn than the engine and how much more torque is applied to the wheels than at the engine. Each gear ratio steps down the engine speed and steps up the torque. Lower gears make the biggest trade. They apply the smallest speed to the wheels, but with the most torque. More torque means more acceleration. This should be somewhat obvious to any road car drivers out there. No matter what car you drive, flooring your car at low speed will always push you harder into your seats than putting the pedal to the metal at 65 miles an hour. Even electric cars have more torque at low speed than high speed, although this is due to the electromagnetic physics of the motor and not necessarily from the presence of a transmission. But low gear comes with a cost. As I said, they produce the lowest wheel speed for a given engine speed, so as the car accelerates and the wheel speed increases, the engine speed is going to increase quickly. Pretty soon you'll hit the red line and you'll need to upshift. Now, you've got a little less torque in your second gear, but you can have a higher wheel speed for a reasonable engine speed. If you add on more gears, you can attain higher speeds. Or, if you add more gears and keep the max speed of the car fixed, you can keep the engine operating closer to its happy point for more of the acceleration. So this will generally increase acceleration speeds, although, as you'll see later, more gear shifts do come at a cost to overall performance. The fact that gear ratios must be fixed for the entire season is therefore a challenging demand. Gear ratios that are too high mean a sacrifice to acceleration, which will result in slow starts and slow accelerations coming out of every corner. But if the highest gear isn't high enough, a car will hit the 15,000 RPM rev limiter before it reaches the end of the longest straightaway. And here's one more wrench to throw into the mix. What about DRS? What good is the reduced drag going to do for you on a long straightaway if you're at your top speed anyway? So, do you gear your car a little higher and save some top-end speed for DRS passes, knowing that on most laps you'll never reach that highest speed and you're sacrificing torque at all other times? Or do you just not have the ability to go faster when you open the flap at the longest straightaway? So, have I mentioned before that engineering is all about trade-offs? So changing gears is the primary job on an F1 engine, although to make things more interesting, they also must act as structural elements. The transmission literally holds the car together between the rear axle and everything forward of the transmission. If the transmission isn't stiff enough, it will flex, and that will really mess up all the intricate workings of the gears inside. The technique for shifting is complex and perhaps best left for another episode. Simply put, hydraulic systems move parts inside the transmission to change what gears are being used. I found it a little difficult to find an exact value for F1 shift times, so for fun I did my own analysis. Here's a clip of a car downshifting. You may also notice that this is an older V8 engine, so the newer cars will likely be able to shift even faster. Listen to the downshift at full speed. That happens in a blink of an eye, doesn't it? Well, actually, a blink of an eye is 0.3 seconds. An easier way to discuss short events like a blink is in milliseconds. 1 millisecond is equal to 1/1000th of a second. So a blink at 0.3 seconds takes 300 milliseconds. Remember that for later, 300 milliseconds. Okay, here's the shift played three times again. Using some audio editing software, I've slowed that down to 1/10th speed. The shift is still very quick, but if you really listen carefully, you can notice a period of time where the pitch of the engine ramps down right in the middle of the clip. The period of time we're interested in measuring is the time where the engine speed is falling from the maximum allowed RPM to something lower in order to match the current wheel speed with the gear ratio that we're shifting into. Here's that clip three times. Now, it's still difficult, but I measured a time of 0.31 seconds. Remember, this audio is slowed down by a factor of 10, so in real life, that shift event took 0.031 seconds, or 31 milliseconds. Remember our eye blink? 300 milliseconds? So, saying an F1 car can shift in the blink of an eye is kind of an insult. It can shift 10 times in the blink of an eye. So, why does that shift speed matter? Well, time spent changing gears, adjusting engine speed, moving hydraulic components, is time not spent applying power to the wheels. Keep in mind the massive aerodynamic forces pushing back on the car, a side effect of all that downforce it's producing. Assume a race has about 3,000 gear shifts, with half of them, 1,500 of them, being upshifts. At 31 milliseconds per shift, that's 47 seconds of total shift time. You're spending 47 seconds just coasting in the middle of a race. Well, not even just coasting, decelerating due to drag. If your opponent can shift just 5 milliseconds faster, 1/60th of an eye blink faster, that's a savings of 7.5 seconds. That's longer than it takes to drive from the back of the grid to the front. If you're 5 milliseconds, 5/1000th of a second slower in shift time, who cares what position you qualify? So that's a little bit of information on transmissions and gear selections. In the future, I'll speak more about how these systems are constructed and operated. Till then, this is Tim wishing you smooth shifting, and may the torque be with you.
And Tim, keep up the good work. Looking forward to another episode of your charming technical stuff. So there you have it, Nass. We're off. You're off to Poe. I'm working on Snetterton, but it's very tough. And I sent you an email about the technical details I'm having a problem with. Of course, we're talking MSV, who runs the Snetterton track.
So yeah, that's fine. I appreciate the effort. If it comes through, the credentials, fine. But I will enjoy Poe, and I'm leaving tomorrow on a big old jetliner, and I shall be reporting, and hopefully we'll have a lot of interviews and look forward to seeing Mr. Brazier and Dr. Mark Farrington. So it's all fantastic, and thanks to everybody who listens to F1 Weekly podcast.
Quickly, prediction for the Monaco Grand Prix and Indianapolis 500. You know what my prediction is. Fernando is going to win the Indy 500, and he's going to have to drink leche de vaca.
There you go. And who will win Monaco?
Monaco, it's going to be Daniel Ricciardo getting payback.
Yeah, well, whoever gets the pole is going to win that race.
Exactly. Ness, keep up the good work. Safe travels. Bon voyage. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Honesty is something we all look for, especially when it comes to auto service. Honest Engines Auto Service Tallahassee is where you'll find it. Since 2005, they've been delivering trusted, dependable service to Florida's capital. Honest Engines is your full-service auto repair center. Bumper to bumper, they have you covered. Honest Engines Auto Repair offers a variety of services. Transmission repair, oil change service, and much, much more. Don't let just anyone work on your car. Bring it to Honest Engines. They'll give your baby the care it deserves. They work closely with you to make sure you know what's being done. With Honest Engines, you don't have to guess what their team is doing. Their highly experienced and certified technicians know just what your car needs, and they'll make sure you do too. So if you're in the Tallahassee area and you need auto repairs, give Honest Engines a call. 850-421-8461 and tell them F1Weekly.com sent you. Honest Engines Auto Repair. Right on the corner, right on the price. 718 Gay Street, Tallahassee.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program.